Broadcasting across the United States, Canada, and around the world, this is the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Your host for the program is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. For more information, resources, or to donate to CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. To start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And when we say we do what we do because life and truth matter, I use life in the sense of the experience of life, the knowledge of life, experiencing Christ, not just knowing, but as has been well said, knowing. There's a difference between cognitively apprehending something and having a real experience with the one who knit us together in our mother's womb. But obviously, we're also very interested in the foundational principle of all anthropology, and that is human life, meaning that we live in a culture today in which life is considered from a different perspective as the culture becomes more and more materialistic than the perspective that was imbued in Western civilization by the Judeo-Christian tradition. And I want to say a few words about that after I do. Your calls, and of course your calls do not have to be relegated to what I'm talking about. You can call on anything you want, and I will try to get to your calls soon. But important to communicate something that I read in a recent blog by Jerry Cohn. He's an evolutionary biologist at the University of Chicago, and he's now not only defending abortion, but he is indeed defending infanticide. This is all part of the slippery slope that we are now on as a culture. So Coyne writes, if you are allowed to abort a fetus that has a severe genetic defect, then why aren't you able to euthanize the same fetus just after it's born? I see no substantive difference that would make the former act moral and the latter act immoral. And I can say that on one level, he's absolutely right. In other words, if you can abort a late-term child, why not take the next step and abort a child a few days after the child is born? Again, the problem here is a failure to recognize that that child has personhood from the moment of conception. But Coyne is not alone. I think of yesterday, Francis Crick. I brought him up on the broadcast because he was co-discoverer of the double helix structure of DNA. I bring him up on this broadcast because he had a partner. His partner was James Watson. And in one of the most chilling quotes I have ever heard, this co-discoverer, again, of the structure of DNA, said that because of the limitations of present detection methods, most birth defects are not discovered until birth. However, said Watson, if a child was not declared alive until 3 days after birth, well, then the doctor could allow the child to die if the parents so chose and save a lot of misery and suffering. Think about the chilling effect of those words. Because after all, everything becomes subjective when we live in a materialistic culture. So now you see the child, and if the child doesn't quite suit your fancy, well, you make a choice and you let that child die. Well, not just let that child die, you take active steps in order that that child, in fact, dies. And this is precisely what Peter Singer was talking about. He's the famous Princeton ethicist, when he said that newborn human babies have no sense of their own existence over time. So killing a newborn baby is never equivalent to killing a person. If a decision is taken by the parents and doctors that it's better that a baby should die, I believe it should be possible to carry out that decision not only by withholding or withdrawing support for life, but also by taking active steps to end the baby's life swiftly and humanely. Again, all of this arbitrary depending on what you think the quality of a person's life actually is. And just last week in the New York Times, Gary Comstock said, "It seems that the medical community has few options to offer parents of newborn babies likely to die." And so the implication is you have to expand those options. Going back to COIN, the reason that we can expand those options is because human beings, after all, are no different than bananas or dogs. Says COIN, the reason we don't allow euthanasia of newborns is because humans are seen as special. And I think this comes from religion. In particular, the view that humans, unlike animals, are endowed with a soul. Well, the materialist certainly doesn't hold to substance dualism. So everything's just a function of brain chemistry and genetics. And once you start teaching this philosophy, you become an instrument for the devolution of civilization, which is already essentially fragile. And COIN is not just a guy on a street corner with a megaphone, or maybe a loud voice. He's a respectable professor in what is thought to be a respectable university. And he is telling people, the students that are impressionable, that there is no such thing as morals. There is no such thing as right or wrong. There's no distinction between an animal and a human being. These are serious times, times in which we as Christians need to be ready to give an answer. This is not optional. The reason the culture is devolving is because we as Christians are not doing what we as Christians are called to do. You can repeat it over and over again, and hopefully it becomes stuck in your memory trace, salt and light. We're called to be salt, we're called to be light, and if we are not salt and light, culture devolves. And civilizations are lost. And right now, without any hyperbole, I can tell you that Western civilization hangs in the balance, and that by a very thin thread. Ethics and morality are now a function of the size and strength of the latest lobby group. And this is in direct opposition to being firmly rooted in scientific and spiritual standards. And thus, with no enduring reference point, societal norms have been reduced to mere matters of choice. Year by year, multiplied millions of preborn children are sacrificed on the altar of abortion, and now we're talking about not just abortion infanticide. It's part of polite conversation. It's an option in the discussion. Now note, when I was quoting, and I put a bunch of quotes together, I was quoting not fringe people. We're talking about a Princeton ethicist. We're talking about a famous university professor. We're talking about the co-discoverer of the structure of DNA. These are not fringe people. And if we don't have an answer, and quite frankly, the quote of the day in the third segment is the answer. It comes directly from Scripture. And I would hope that this will not only be a quote of the day, but something that perpetuates on in your life and mind, becoming something that you memorize today. The quote of the day, again, coming up in the third segment. First up, Joe in Ocala, Florida, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Joe.
How you doing, Mr. Hank? First of all, God bless you. We appreciate what you do, sir.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask this question and hang up, Hank. So I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you.
But I was just wondering what your take on, are Christians going to have a judgment when they die? And I appreciate you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, absolutely. Christians are going to have a judgment when they die. So there is a separation that takes place between the sheep and the goats. Metaphors for those who believe and those who do not believe. And then there is a judgment. John says, then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it, earth and sky fled from his presence, and there was no place for them. I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. John goes on to say, the sea gave up the dead that were in them, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them, and everyone was judged according to what they had done. So there is a judgment for what you did in this life, both for the damned and for the redeemed. This is why I say often on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, what you do now counts for all eternity. So Paul points out the foundation is Jesus Christ. No other foundation. I think it's 1 Corinthians chapter 3. But then on that foundation, you can build. You can build using wood, hay, stubble, all perishable materials. Or you could build using gold, silver, and costly stones. And the day of the Lord will show what kind of material you were building with. And so Paul says there are some that are going to escape the flames, as it were, as a man escapes a burning building with little more than charred clothes upon his back. The metaphor is poignant and profound. They'll be saved, but only as one escaping through the flames. Now think about it. We're talking, I think about my life's work. It's important to me. This morning, I did a op-ed piece. I did three videos. I did a podcast. I'm doing a broadcast. I have cancer. I'm excited about being involved in the kingdom. But this is a very short sliver of time I'm involved in. Eternity is forever. So if you think about it logically, Why not lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not corrupt, where thieves do not break in and steal? Or follow the instruction of Jesus. Behold, I come quickly. My reward is with me. And I give to everyone according to what he's done. Quick answer, a summation, yes. You will be judged for what you have done in this life. And you will receive rewards. I've written a whole chapter on rewards in both Afterlife as well as my book Resurrection, both available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can find them on the web at equip.org. Remember, we do what we do because life and truth matter. We're asking people to stand with us prayerfully and financially. Without you, we simply can't do what we do. We want you to join the team in making a difference, not only for time, but also for eternity. Be right back with more answers and more of the Bible Answer Men broadcast.
The Christian Research Institute exists to equip you with resources to stand against assaults on biblical truth. This month, we're tackling the threat of Darwinism. In Darwin's House of Cards, veteran journalist Tom Bethel explains that Darwin's theory is a 19th century idea past its prime, propped up by logical fallacies, bogus claims, and empirical evidence that is all but disintegrating under an onslaught of new scientific discoveries. Are you equipped to help dismantle the Darwinian myth that dominates our world today? To receive your copy of Darwin's House of Cards as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Are you tired of Darwinian evolutionists claiming that if you don't agree with them, then you don't believe in science? In place of your next Netflix binge, be sure to watch the DVD Revolutionary: Michael Behe and the Mystery of Molecular Machines. This documentary film shows you not only why intelligent design theory is science, indeed science that follows the evidence wherever it leads, this film will equip you to defend the truth that all living things are the work of an intelligent designer rather than a blind and undirected material process. To receive a copy of the DVD Revolutionary as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The divide between the two major branches of Islam, Sunni and Shia, stems from the homicide of Muhammad. Many Shias contend that Muhammad's young wife Aisha committed the murder, while many Sunnis believe a Jewish woman was ultimately responsible. Despite perpetual dispute, Sunni and Shia share remarkable unanimity when it comes to the main and the plain things of Islam. Other topics include challenging the central claim of the Nation of Islam, are all religions man-made, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. In a brilliantly produced documentary film on DVD from the Discovery Institute titled Revolutionary, Professor Michael Behe, a distinguished biochemist and recognized leader in the intelligent design movement, pokes serious holes in Darwinism with trailblazing insights into irreducible complexity. You might be asking, what is irreducible complexity? It is a concept clearly explained in Revolutionary, Michael Behe and the Mystery of Molecular Machines. This DVD will show you exactly why Darwin's theory is well past its prime. To receive a copy of the DVD, Revolutionary, as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Right back to, well, let's go to our phone callers. First up is Laura, listening in Antioch, California, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Laura.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am very blessed, and I want to say thank you for your ministry. And, you know, sometimes I listen, and I worry that because some of our freedoms are being taken away, you know, year by year, the nativity, they don't want us, you know, atheists don't want us to do this, that maybe one day we won't have this opportunity to have a station like you have. So I just want to encourage myself and everybody out there, continue to give, because one day we may not have this freedom. And thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you so much for those words, Laura.
Today I have a question about Luke 4. Forgive me, I'm on the road, so I can't quote it. But the first part of Luke 4 is Jesus in the temple. He opens from the book of Isaiah. And he quotes it and he says, today in your presence, this has been fulfilled. And I was picturing myself in that situation, and you could probably hear a pin drop. Kind of deer in the headlight type of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in Luke 4, he talks about back in the days of Elijah, God, he dealt with some widows, but there's one particular widow that he went to help, but not the others. And then the leaders, whoever it was that were listening, got so mad at Jesus, they decided to just throw him out. And, you know, they were furious. So I wasn't really sure as to why they got so mad at what he said about the widows.
Well, you know, this is a great example of Jesus pointing back to the Old Testament and demonstrating that what happened in the Old Testament is not all that novel and new, in that the same thing is reoccurring again in the present. In the Old Testament, you had the people of God rejecting the prophets of God. But you see that with Jeremiah. Jeremiah is thrown into a well for telling the people of God precisely what they needed to hear. And then the false prophets come along and tell the people what their itching ears want to hear, things that are going to be destructive to them. And those are the prophets that the people follow. So Jesus is now giving some examples. Those examples go back to the Old Testament prophets, like the prophet Elijah and Elisha, rejected by their own country, by their own people in their own time. And now Jesus is using this as an example of precisely what is happening. He comes to his own, and his own receive him not. And of course, he is using a proverb. And that proverb incites the people, as it were, to a sort of jealousy, not a good jealousy, but a jealousy. Jesus says, You will surely say this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself. Whatever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in your own country. Well, Jesus now is using this idea to underscore the fact that they're not accepting what he is doing. His country is rejecting him. And so what happens? Well, the people in the synagogue are upset. Jesus is condemning Israel. Israel continues to lack faith and faithfulness. But what happens as a result of that is the gospel goes out to the Gentiles. And Paul makes a big point of this. What happens is the Jews reject, the Gentiles receive. The receiving by the Gentiles causes the Jews to become jealous and spurs them on to perhaps listening as well. So again, Jesus had just offered two occasions in which the prophets of the Lord offered miraculous acts of grace to Gentiles when Israel was in a state of belief. And if the Jews reject Christ, again, there is an attendant consequence, and the consequence is the gospel goes out to the Gentiles, which is really what it's all about anyway, because Jesus was never a parochial Jewish Messiah. He came so that the gospel might go out to the Jews and to the Gentiles, in fact, to the ends of the earth.
Praise God for that.
Well, Laura, thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bless you. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Matthew next, listening in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Matthew.
Hi there, Hank. God bless you. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
So my question has to do with an apologetics response to an objection to the historical Jesus. One of the most common ancient writings, cited by people like Frank Turek and William Lane Craig is the writings of Josephus. I've encountered a lot of objections online when debating atheists that the entry in Josephus' writing on Jesus has been accused of being a flat-out forgery. Now, I'm curious as to how I would respond to something like that, seeing as that I can't find any scholarly references that back up this objection. It seems to me like it's more of an objection thrown out by someone with a theological axe to grind. So how would I go about responding to this objection there, Hank?
Well, I think you have to give a little credit to the objector because there is a sense in which Josephus has been sort of remade so that it fits the perfect paradigm, so that it almost sounds like Josephus is a person who is giving his own assent as a Jew writing to please the Romans to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. In other words, there have been some fabrications out there, where people play fast and loose with the text of Josephus, and so good, you can acknowledge that. However, having said that, I wrote a book with Dr. Paul Meyer on the Da Vinci Code, Fact or Fiction. I think I mentioned that in this book. I certainly mentioned it in my book, Has God Spoken? But the passage that Josephus quotes that is most often talked about, Antiquities 2200, shows no tampering whatever. And it is present in all of Josephus's manuscripts. When you look at the specific passage, 1863, there Josephus comments on the character of Christ, on the crucifixion and the resurrection. And the translation of that passage, a majority of scholars today view as historically reliable and authentic, particularly in view of newly discovered texts. So it's not just a religious conceit. It is, as we find more and more textual attestation, the veracity of this particular passage becomes clearer and clearer. And I actually have the passage. I looked it up in my book, Has God Spoken? The passage, again, it's Antiquities 18, 63. At this time, and this is Josephus writing, at this time there was a wise man called Jesus, and his conduct was good. And he was known to be virtuous. Many people among the Jews and the other nations became his disciples. Pilate condemned him to be crucified and to die. But those who had become his disciples did not abandon his discipleship. They reported that he had appeared to them 3 days after his crucifixion and that he was alive. Accordingly, he was perhaps the Messiah. Notice the qualification. Concerning whom the prophets have reported wonders, and the tribe of the Christians so named after him has not disappeared to this day. Now again, a majority of credible scholars consider this translation to be appropriate and correct. Again, because of the attestation of textual science, so you have evidence for this. But I would say something else that ought to be mentioned in this discussion. That this whole argument does not hang on Josephus. Josephus is part of the plot. There are many others. Cornelius Tacitus. I mean, you think about Tacitus. I mean, here you have a man who is one of the great historians of Rome, and he is lending credibility to Christ as a crucified Christ, precisely as the scriptures make plain. Or we think about Gaius Suetonius Tranquillus. I remember a number of years ago I went to Barnes & Noble, and I actually got the whole kit and caboodle, the 12 Caesars, and listened to it many times over. But here you have a contemporary of Tacitus, the chief secretary to Emperor Hadrian, and he again provides attestation for the historicity of Christ. And there are many other examples that can be given. Plinius the Younger, but there are also some unreliable sources that oftentimes apologists point to, like Lucian of Samosata, the other examples, the Talmud. These are examples you don't want to use. So there are reliable sources and unreliable sources. You should distinguish between the two. And I have a little section in my book, Has God Spoken, on that very thing. I'm going to leave it at that, coming up to a station break. Got an incredible quote of the day coming up right after the break. More answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Remember, we do what we do because life and truth matter. The map is not the territory. The menu's not the meal. We would never want to mistake the cradle for its occupant. We want a dynamic relationship with the living Lord of the universe. Back in just a bit with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Please don't touch that dial.
In this case, the revolution has been televised. Revolutionary tells the story of Michael Behe's transformation from mild-mannered biochemist to orthodoxy-challenging revolutionary. It also explores the rise of the broader intelligent design movement in biology, the attempt to silence supporters of intelligent design in federal court, and the eventual vindication of the ideas of Professor Behe and others during the last decade. It's time to think critically and stand up to the unscientific status quo. Are you ready to join Michael Behe and be a revolutionary? To receive your copy of the DVD, Revolutionary, Michael Behe and the Mystery of Molecular Machines, as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Pro-choice advocates often contend that while human embryos are biological members of the human species, embryos have not yet reached the developmental stage necessary to identify them as persons. But is a human embryo a potential person or a person with great potential? Other topics include the divide between Sunni and Shia Muslims, challenging the central claim of the Nation of Islam, when freedom of expression and emotions collide on campus, does God have a spirit body, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. In his book, Darwin's House of Cards, Tom Bethel writes, "The science of Darwinism was poor all along and supported by very few facts. Although Darwinism has been promoted as science," says Bethel, "its unstated role has been to prop up a philosophy of materialism and atheism along with it. As Christians, we are called by Christ to be wise and build our house on the rock. Darwinian devotees, however, have built their ivory tower on sinking sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against that house and it fell, and great was its fall." To receive your copy of Darwin's House of Cards as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. In his book, Darwin's House of Cards, Tom Bethel writes, "The science of Darwinism was poor all along and supported by very few facts. Although Darwinism has been promoted as science, its unstated role has been to prop up a philosophy, the philosophy of materialism and atheism along with it. As Christians, we must understand the facts and be able to dismantle Darwin's outdated ideas and their de-evolutionary influence on our world." To receive your copy of Darwin's House of Cards as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And the quote of the day comes from the most quotable book in the history of the human race. It has been sold in more copies. It has been translated into more languages than any book in the history of the human race. Of course, I'm talking about the Bible. And the quote of the day is in concert with what I communicated in my opening monologue. There's a depreciation the value of life in our culture. When you read the Word of God, all of that dissipates. Thus the quote of the day from Psalm 139. This happens to be a psalm of David, who said, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." That is one of those verses, Christina, that I think that everyone ought to get into their memory trace. All the days ordained for me written in your book before even one of them came to be, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And that when a woman conceives, she conceives not just a body, not just a fertilized egg, but she conceives a body-soul unity, both the physical and the metaphysical aspect of humanity.
And that's really important to understand, because like we were talking about yesterday with saying that a monkey is more important than a child, it's just crazy. And when you start going down that slippery slope, we have what you were talking about with infanticide, and it reminds me of all of the horrors of Rome, or where in the first century, where they were committing infanticide, and it's all about what's good for me, what's the best for me, and when happiness and our comfort is what is the line we draw for morality, then everything goes, and that's a very dangerous place to be. Who would have known? I mean, I would use this when I talk to people about abortion. I was like, well, if kids aren't kids, you know, in the womb, then why shouldn't you be able to kill them after? I mean, but it's so, because when we put these markers on life, like intelligibility or how many limbs they have or things like that, we're constantly seeing examples of people that don't have limbs, and they're huge examples of Christ. Kids that have Down syndrome but have more love in their pinky than what we would consider a, quote, normal person has. God uses people from every walk of life, and it's just crazy to me that you could just say, oh, these people aren't worth it.
You know, the point you just brought up, I think, is a point that needs to be amplified. You're so right to point to Rome. Because in Rome, there was an idea in the minds of people that females were not as important as males, and therefore you could leave a female baby after the female baby had been born before the statue of Nero, and let that baby cry itself, not to sleep, but to death. So a culture determined the value of that human being. And we're doing the same thing. We're arbitrarily saying that this human being has a certain amount of worth because they're a designer baby, and you mentioned a Down syndrome baby. But the Down syndrome baby, and by the way, the whole idea of Down syndrome is based on an evolutionary paradigm. Mm. But the Down syndrome baby does not have the same worth as the designer baby. And so if we think that that baby doesn't have as much worth, then we make an arbitrary decision based on the values of our present-day culture to allow that baby to die, as it were, before the statue of modern materialism. And I think as well, we have to recognize that there is, as you point out correctly, there's value in suffering. There's value in each life. I think, and this is goes a long way back for me, but there was a lady in Atlanta. She was the wife of John Haggai. And John Haggai was one of the great evangelists, is one of the great evangelists of all time, particularly in the work that he's done around the world in the Far East and many other places. But his wife and he had a baby, and that baby, I think his name was John or Johnny. I don't remember. They call his name John. I forget the title of the book, so I'm reaching back in my memory bank here. But I remember the impact of the book on me, because that baby was born without any capacity to show love or affection or response to his mother. And his mother cared for the child until the child finally died. And I don't remember how old, might have been 18, 19, might have been in the 20s, but many years. But the book is about how that child, I think again his name was Johnny, that boy profoundly changed her from being selfish to selfless.
Yeah, and it's because you see someone like my Uncle Reg, your brother, he came across a 19-year-old that had gotten hit by a car. And if we say that kid that she knew that he would die at a certain age, that his wife, well, why would you let him live if you know he's going to die? Then how is her life worth anything? She died at 20. I mean, she just didn't know. And so this knowledge of when we're going to die, somehow making it okay to, like, get rid of life is crazy to me. And I wanted to mention something else really quickly with this idea of designer babies. And this is why I think that we do have a right to put our say in about homosexuality and about transgenderism and things like that, because they do affect us. Because as soon as we're trying to get in vitro fertilization or things like that for those people that can't have babies in the quote unquote natural way, then what they do is they decide what markers there should be for a baby. You know, if this sperm or whatever has a predisposition toward this or that, then maybe we shouldn't choose, or the embryo, these markers. And so then we're dealing with an ethical issue that wouldn't necessarily come across if we weren't using those kind of means to create babies.
Yeah, let's go back to the phone lines. Talk to Becky in South Carolina, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
Hi.
The question that I have is just a question. I want to be able to hang up and listen to it, but the question I have is actually a question that my daughter keeps asking me, because she has some friends that are homosexuals, lesbians, and male gays, and I don't really know what to call it other than that. But what she wants to know is, why did God say that it's wrong? And it's a question that stumps me. I don't have the actual answer to it. She believes it's wrong, and I believe that it's wrong, but... And we know all of the Bible verses that back it up, but we can't get down to the bottom line of the mind of God of why did he say it was wrong? Back to that very beginning of why did he say it was wrong? And that's what her friends keep coming to her with. Well, why did he say it? If two people loved each other, like if two women or two men love each other, then why can't they be together? They understand why you can't murder someone. They understand why you can't covet or be jealous. That hurts yourself. But why couldn't two people love each other if they weren't hurting someone?
Yeah, I think it's really important, first of all, to say God designed us, and therefore God knows what is best for us. And so even if we can't answer the why question, the fact that God unequivocally says that homosexuality is a violation of natural law, that we should heed the instructions of the Maker. And we would also do well to recognize that God does not condemn homosexuality in some arbitrary and capricious fashion, but he's defining the borders of human sexuality so that our joy might be complete. It doesn't take an advanced degree in physiology to appreciate the fact that the human body is not designed for homosexual relationships. So you might hear all of these slogans and sound bites, but none of them ever change the scientific reality that homosexual relationships can be devastating, not only from a psychological, but also from a physiological perspective. And, of course, as Christina was talking about earlier on, there's a slippery slope here. And we've seen that slippery slope cash out in polite society. I mean, we started with a few letters. Now we have many, many letters, LGBTQI, and the letters keep coming. So we are now defining and determining human anthropology in a way that most certainly hurts human beings made in the image of God. I mean, a simple answer to this is that gender differentiated parenting is clearly the best for children. I mean, this is not a scriptural injunction or platitude or paradigm, but rather this is something that we find through sociological metrics. So God, at the end of the day, tells us what is best for us, and common sense also lets us know that the human body was not made for homosexual relationships. You know, I could give a far more adequate answer given more time, but you can find a complete answer to this question in the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, revised and updated, available to those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. And remember, for those who join CRI's monthly support team, be pleased to personalize a copy to you, a family member, or a friend. Sorry for the call didn't get to. We'll be right back here next week with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and live Christianly. In appreciation for your gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of Tom Bethel's book, Darwin's House of Cards, to show you why, like Bethel, he's inclined to say that there is actually no evidence for evolution. Just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The divide between the two major branches of Islam, Sunni and Shia, stems from the homicide of Muhammad. Many Shias contend that Muhammad's young wife, Aisha, committed the murder, while many Sunnis believe a Jewish woman was ultimately responsible. Despite perpetual dispute, Sunni and Shia share remarkable unanimity when it comes to the main and the plain things of Islam. Other topics include challenging the central claim of the Nation of Islam, are all religions man-made, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Are you tired of Darwinian evolutionists claiming that if you don't agree with them, then you don't believe in science? In place of your next Netflix binge, be sure to watch the DVD Revolutionary, Michael Behe and the Mystery of Molecular Machines.
This documentary film shows you not only why intelligent design theory is science, indeed science that follows the evidence wherever it leads, this film will equip you to defend the truth that all living things are the work of an intelligent designer rather than a blind and undirected material process. To receive a copy of the DVD Revolutionary as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.